Hi, I'm Marisa McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
And I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk about living the food life in Philadelphia and beyond. This week is a special episode dedicated to a review of our home cooking highlights from 2016.
So there is one news item I wanted to talk
yes,
about.
Yes, go for it, Joy.
Okay. Cuisinart has recalled millions of their food processors.
Well, is it just the food processor? Is it the whole food processor?
It's just the blade. It's just the blade.
So, it's 8 million blades have been recalled.
Now, we talked a little bit about this before we recorded, and you said that you don't have a Cuisinart.
No, I have a Magimix.
Huh.
An acquaintance, he was selling his barely used Magimix and said, hey, do you want to buy it? And I was working with my Aunt Flora's 1970s Cuisinart, so I upgraded a couple years ago. So I don't have a Cuisinart, but I feel like I need to reach out to my cousins because the blade I gave them with that 1970s Cuisinart was a newer one.
And was it?
Yeah.
The thing that, first of all, when I think of Cuisinart, I feel like it's like Kleenex. Like Cuisinart means food processor to
me. Yeah, absolutely.
So, until you said that to me, it didn't even really occur to me that somebody might have a food processor that's not a Cuisinart. But I thought, I've had mine for so long, there was no way I thought that it affected me.
Yeah.
But I saw on Facebook, somebody was like, my 18-year-old Cuisinart's blade has been recalled. And I was like, I don't think mine's quite 18 years old. So I checked, and sure enough,
yeah,
it's recalled.
I know. I need to get my mom to make sure to participate because I gave her a Cuisinart food processor maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And so she's smack dab in the middle of the recall because it's from 1996 to December 2015.
Right, right.
And so I think I gave it to her in maybe 2010 or 11.
I wanted to talk about it because I know that lots of you probably have Cuisinarts and maybe like me, you didn't think it could possibly affect you. But if you have a Cuisinart that you bought in those aforementioned years and you have like the riveted blade, there's like four little rivets on them, you really should check it out because people have had mouth lacerations and tooth injuries from, I guess, the blade breaking up in the work bowl. I have, sent away for my new blade, and I'm probably not going to use it till it gets back because I'm very cautious.
Well, maybe it's a moment to explore some of the other features of your food processor, perhaps
true.
A slicing.
I have other blades.
Yes.
Well, we'll post a link to the recall information, and please check, you guys. We don't want anybody to get a bloody mouth around the holidays.
Take care.
All right, now let's get into our special topic.
So dinners. I feel like we talk about a lot on this podcast, but one of the things we come back to every time is what's for dinner, what to make for dinner, how to cook dinner, how to breathe new life into your dinners, and generally how to keep cooking when you don't feel like it. And so we want to kind of talk about our year in dinners.
Now, if you recall, when we talked about our food and kitchen resolutions for the coming year, I said that I wanted to be very good about maintaining my meal planning calendar. And I said that I wanted to make more new recipes from cookbooks and other sources. And so when I sat down yesterday to comb through my meal planning calendar, see how well I did at recording things and like count up the distinct dishes and recipes that I made, I was very impressed with myself.
I'm very impressed with you as well, Joy, because this is quite a list.
I do this most years, and typically I make between like 30 and 45 individual meals for dinner, dishes for dinner. And this year I did 62 different things.
It's amazing. It's really awesome.
I counted them all up and I looked at all of my different recipe sources and I just made a list of the books, magazines, websites, links, and I feel like it will be a very helpful resource for me going into next year. And I have to say I'm motivated to top myself.
I think you can do it. I mean, a new thing every week plus some old favorites and you're there.
I, when I did the math, it's like basically more than one new dish a week. And you know what I think helped me tremendously?
What?
You. Knowing that I was going to come every week and we were going to talk about what we were doing in our home kitchens. And, a lot of times I did it for the spice of the podcast.
Well, amen, Joy. I didn't do quite as well with my experimental dinners. I spent a little time going through my notebooks and pulling up pictures to pull together the things that I cooked this year. And my list only goes to 35, and I'm sure that there are a few things I'm forgetting, but one clear difference between how I cook dinner and how Joy cooks dinner is that Joy did a really great job of cooking from new recipes this year, and I didn't. It was a busy year, tough year, so I did a lot of sort of cooking from the top of my head, you know, like, okay, I have these things in my refrigerator, what can I make?
I certainly did a fair amount of that too. But I have always loved cooking from recipes, and I definitely did more of that than usual this year. But when I look over my list, certain patterns emerge. One thing I noticed right away was that I'm cooking almost not at all from food magazines, which is something I have done a ton of in previous years.
That's really interesting. Do you not subscribe to as many as you used to?
I think a couple of things are happening. One, as you know, I've had this epic hunt for real estate, and I've been thinking that I was going to move for like over a year. Now I really am going to move. But because of that, I've let some subscriptions lapse.
Aha.
And the other thing that has been happening is I think that these magazines have I become too old for them? Are they chasing millennial readers? But I have detected a distinct shift in tone and content in magazines that I have loved for years, like Food and Wine,
yeah,
Saveur, even Cooking Light. Bon Appetit, that makes them, I find myself tearing out fewer and fewer and fewer recipes. Have you noticed something like that?
I have. I haven't subscribed to Saveur in a while, but I still have a subscription to Bon Appetit. And I feel like it's a lot of restaurant food, right, in magazines.
And
like
trend-driven food.
The word that pops to mind is gonzo food writing. You know, mm-hmm. It's like we've got gonzo journalism. It's sort of like, you know, the crazy experimental recipes from restaurants where it's like you have three sub-recipes before you can even get to the real recipe. Or it's just not something I'm interested in. So,
yeah.
You know, it feels like it's walking that line for me. I mean, to be perfectly fair, I don't do a ton of cooking from recipes because by the time I get to dinner time, I just want to make some food. But I feel like in the past I was borrowing more inspiration from magazines,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not even doing that as much as I used to.
Looking at this list, I see only one recipe that I pulled out of a magazine and made, which was the cashew cream pad thai from Cooking Light.
Uh-huh.
Which was very delicious, but that was the only one on this whole list.
Well, you've got some Cooks Illustrated on here, but...
Yes, that mostly... I have a Cooks Illustrated web subscription, okay. So that... And a lot of that comes from when I watch America's Test Kitchen, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to make that.
Yeah,
there was one episode called, I think, Easy Italian or Everyday Italian,
mm-hmm.
and they had two recipes that I made immediately, and I made it several times. One was the semolina gnocchi, and that they call Roman gnocchi.
I remember you talking about that.
And a roasted sausage and grape dish. And that was the same episode. I made them that night, and I've made them several times since then. I do think in the new year, though, I'm going to subscribe to the print version of Cooks Illustrated magazine, also Milk Street, which we've talked about.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to go back to Fine Cooking, which I used to subscribe to many years ago, and I haven't had in a while. And maybe I'm going to let Food and Wine and Saveur and Bon Appetit pass for my life for the moment, at least.
I think that's perfectly fair. I recently, because I had airline miles to use up, I subscribed to Sunset, which is a West Coast magazine.
Oh.
But I find that I often derive a lot of inspiration from the recipes in that magazine. In part, I think, because my West Coast roots are showing, and you know, I find the things that are included in a, you know, California based magazine to be a little bit more appealing to me than like the East Coast.
That's heavy interesting. Stuff. I do sometimes run across a Sunset recipe on somewhere online that is very appealing.
I have an sort of a big compendium of Sunset recipes from like the last 10 years, and there's a lot in it that I really like, and I have actually cooked from that mm-hmm. book. So I feel like perhaps going into the new year, Sunset's going to provide some useful fodder.
Another thing I noticed in my own list is I cooked a lot from the New York Times.
You did.
Like a lot.
Yeah. I'm looking at this list and I feel like the New York Times has gotten better and better about presenting recipes in a way that's useful and accessible. And it's good stuff.
Did they? I think, was it this year that they relaunched New York Times Cooking? I think it may have been.
It was either this year or early last year, but recently, within, you know, the last 12 or 13
and
months.
And I get at least one or two newsletters for them mm-hmm. a week, where the newsletter is really well done. It's like a chatty essay-ish type thing in the beginning that like talks about various recipes, and then underneath that it's a list with photos.
Wow.
And so usually when they come, I just glance at it, and if I see anything that I want to remember to make later, I like Pinterest it for later. And some of the most often made recipes for me this year came from that. In particular, the oven roasted chicken shawarma, which I loved and made again and again. Yeah, and if you haven't made that, you really should. A very good Marisa and Scott dinner, because it's flavorful, but it's not spicy.
Uh-huh.
And it's very easy to do it in a low carb fashion.
Awesome.
And then of course, and this was something I made a lot last year too, the anchovy, lemon, parsley, chicken thighs in a skillet from Melissa Clark. It's such a winning recipe. And then after that, I guess there's no real front runner. There was some Cooks Illustrated, some Nom Nom Paleo, recipes from books that we've talked about on this show, including Lucky Peach's 101 Easy Asian Recipes, Fuchsia Dunlop's Every Grain of Rice, The New Persian Kitchen, The Indian Family Table, and Whole Grains from a New Generation. And then, of course, I would say about half of my list is recipes, like straight up recipes that I made from some source. And then there's definitely half of, let's call it Marisa's style. You know, you open the fridge.
You see what you've got.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you just plan to make something that you have made again and again and don't look at a recipe for. And for me, ones like that I make all the time are green salad with roasted potatoes and aioli.
Always delicious.
Homemade pizza. I have a lot of variations on pasta, whole wheat pasta with stuff on here, like maybe five different ways. Did you notice any themes in your?
I noticed that perhaps it's time for me to start making different things, for one. I feel like I've been cooking from the same repertoire now for a number of years, you know, for the most of my married life at this point. You know, it's kind of the same array of things. I make a lot of soups. I cook a lot of cauliflower. I'm very reliant on ground turkey and boneless, skinless chicken thighs. Like, those are
two
of my primary proteins. And I also noticed that a lot of what I do is sort of components. So, for instance, I don't necessarily make a unified dish a lot, but it'll be like, okay, I'm going to make turkey burgers and then I need a couple of vegetables to go with it. So I'll roast some carrots and I'll roast some broccoli. Or I'm going to make, I don't know, like another thing that I make a lot and then turn into different things are pulled chicken thighs. So that is one of my like top 10 protein things that I can then turn into a bunch of different things. So I'll take like a couple of pounds of boneless, skinless chicken thighs and I'll put them in a pot and I'll pour a slurry of like a jar or a can of tomatoes pureed with an onion and cilantro and garlic and salt. And then I'll pour that over the chicken and cook it until it shreds. And then it'll become...
It's a little taco-y.
It either becomes tacos or quesadillas or chili, or I'll put it over some like rice with some beans and sauteed peppers. Like, it just becomes like, it's a protein that can go half a dozen different ways in terms of what becomes dinner. And so sometimes it's almost like, for some people, you saute an onion and then figure out what comes next. Sometimes I braise boneless, skinless chicken thighs and then figure out what comes next. And so that's one thing that I've relied on a lot. I also have been I've done a lot of sheet pan dinners this year where it's like, you know, Brussels sprouts, potatoes, and some chunked up turkey kielbasa. Put it on a sheet pan, put it in the oven until it's, you know.
Where do you get your turkey kielbasa?
I most buy it at Trader Joe's.
Is that what we had at your house on election night, or was that pork kielbasa?
That was pork kielbasa.
Okay, I was going to say, that was really good.
That was Costco pork kielbasa.
I really liked
it. And that was really good. But most of the time I do turkey kielbasa because it's lower in fat.
Right.
And then I do a lot of soups. And it's funny because just last night I was going to make a pot of soup and Scott came in from work and he's like, what's for dinner? And I said, soup. And he went, oh.
I thought you ended up having soup anyway.
We did, but we had different soup.
We didn't talk about this. I saw it on Instagram.
So instead of making a big pot of ground beef soup, which is one of my classic go-to soups, because then we had this whole conversation about, well, what else should I make for dinner? If you don't want this soup, what do you want? And there was really no consensus. But then it was like 6:30. And so we were on the precipice of either succumbing to takeout or, you know, having to come up with a plan. And so I ended up, during the summer, I made half a dozen quarts of tomato soup concentrate. So it's basically like seasoned tomato puree. And so then I sauteed an onion and butter, poured my puree on, added a cup of milk, cooked it till it was soft and like the onions were soft, and then pureed it. And then I've been working on a story about woven baked goods. And so I've made a lot of challah recently. And so we had toasted cheese sandwiches and grilled cheese and carrot sticks.
That sounds delicious.
But it wasn't like the big pot of soup I make that I was going to make. And I'll probably make it tonight because the meat is defrosted. So I got to do something with it.
Last night I was very ambitious and I made actually like three different things from that aforementioned Indian family table book.
Wow.
I made this dal with this special like spice infused ghee that I poured on top of it.
Oh my God.
I made a smoky like mashed eggplant dish and roti.
Wow.
And Dan came home. I was extremely harried. I've been very busy at work this week. And he was like, what's going on in here? I was like, I got really ambitious about dinner tonight. I don't know what came over me. And then I said to him, what is the point of being a food writer if you can't make a super elaborate Indian dinner on a typical Wednesday night?
Hey.
And so we did. We enjoyed it very much.
It sounds good.
I'm in a soup rut, I have to say. Like, I make that lentil soup that I make all the time.
Yeah.
But I like all kinds of soups.
Yeah, I make the same sort of half dozen soups. So I'll make chicken soup. This ground beef soup that I mentioned, I'm sure that I've mentioned it on the podcast before. It's essentially a big pot of vegetable soup where you might use like stew beef in some cases. But what I do is, as I'm sauteing the onions, I add in a pound of ground beef, and then that becomes the protein. And then it's just whatever vegetables I have, kale, cabbage, potatoes, carrot, celery, onion, peas.
It does have the advantage of being different every time, though.
Yeah, and it's good. Like, it's good, but it's – I can see how if you weren't in the mood for a big chunky soup, it would not appeal. But, yeah, so I make that, the chicken soup. I make your lentil soup. I'll make, like, a cheesy cauliflower soup or a pureed carrot broccoli soup. And
– when you make your cheesy cauliflower soup, do you make a cheese sauce that you stir in?
Or I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I usually do that, too. But I was hoping you were going to tell me there was an easier way that was just as good.
No, but I've made enough cheese sauces in my life now at this point that a cheese sauce comes together really easily. And I have I don't have a lot of nonstick in my kitchen. We've talked about a lot nonstick cookware a lot, but I do have a little nonstick. It was a caramel pot. Rose Levy Barenbaum has a small line of cookware.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so she, years ago now, out of the blue, a PR company sent me this pot to like talk about Rose Levy Barenbaum's cookware. And it is the best little pot for cheese sauces because it's nonstick. You don't have to scrub it out. And that is the problem with a cheese sauce.
Do you do a roux with butter and flour?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just know that sometimes you're going for a low carb, or do you feel like it's so little flour that it doesn't even count?
It's never more than like a tablespoon of cheese. Yeah. Sometimes though, I will make cheese sauce with cornstarch rather than flour and butter.
Then you make a slurry with hot water and whisk it in, or?
What I'll do is I'll pour milk into a pan, add a little butter, whisk in the cornstarch while it's still cool. Cold. And then as it starts to thicken, just add in a couple handfuls of cheese.
Oh, interesting.
And that way it's less carby.
Less starchy. Interesting. Yeah. I don't think I made a soup like that this whole year because of this. I think the only soups I have on this list are my lentil soup. I made a tomato and red pepper soup that had pistachios in it at one point. That was very good, although I only made it once. And then butternut squash soup. Oh, and also black bean soup. But, I mean, considering the wide world of soups, it's pretty...
It's true. Did you not make your peanut butter chicken?
Not even one time.
That's such a good soup.
Yeah, that's a oversight. I should make that soon. That's like a good January soup because it is so full of colorful vegetables. It really feels healthy and
true.
New Year's resolution-y, dare I say.
Other things that I make a lot without recipes in addition to soup are like casseroles. So whether it's like a pasta bake or some sort of bean and rice and sauteed veggie thing, I did a lot of that this year where it was something like, okay, I can spend half an hour cooking, throw it in the oven. And, you know, I taught a lot this year and I did a lot of events. And so a lot of the cooking I did was, okay, I can make this in the afternoon Let it sit for an hour and then tell Scott to throw it in the oven for 45 minutes.
True.
And then it was something that we could eat for 2 days. And so that was a lot of my cooking.
Speaking of casseroles, I mean, this list is pretty good, but it's not perfect because I remember making that, and we talked about it on the show, the celery root lasagna Modern Potluck.
Mm-hmm.
But I must have not written it down on my meal planning calendar. But I'll add it to my list because I definitely made that and it was very good and I want to remember.
Yeah, that one sounded great.
How did you do with maintaining your meal planning? I know that was a goal for you as well.
I feel like I planned nearly every week, except for the weeks when I was traveling with the book. And that the weeks that I planned – so if I planned maybe, let's say, 40 weeks out of the 52, there may have been 3 or 4 weeks where I executed the plan flawlessly.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part – I probably planned and then executed 75% of the plan.
Yeah, I would say the same is true for me. Something goes sideways all the time. Just this week, I had made this wonderful Brussels sprouts and tofu dish from the book Plenty.
Yeah.
And we had it on one night. It was so good. And then I planned to have leftovers the next night. But then the next night came and I just didn't feel like it.
Yeah.
Does that happen to you? You like hit a wall and you just cannot eat the thing that you plan to eat.
Yeah. I after Thanksgiving, I made a big pot of turkey soup and we had it 2 nights. And there was still, it was just a case of there was so much of it that we couldn't do it. And I ended up freezing it.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid that it might be one of those cases where I end up after 6 months throwing it away. Simply because, you know how sometimes you get a thought in your head about something even if it's not true, where I just felt like it wasn't very good. And I think it was good. It was simply that I got tired of it, and so I'm gonna have to work hard to overcome that prejudice of, oh, that wasn't very good soup. It was simply that I was tired of turkey by the time
makes sense.
It had been a full week of eating turkey by the time I was done with that soup.
I ended up going out to Brigantessa the night that I was supposed to eat the leftover Brussels sprouts. It's very delicious. It doesn't happen every week, but it happens enough that I feel like I would be remiss to say, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I perfectly adhere to my meal plan all the time. But I definitely made one. There's very few blank weeks on my meal planning calendar. There are some just because I spaced or, you know, whatever. I don't travel as much as you, but I had a couple of weeks where I was away.
Yeah. I mean, I will confess this was a hard year between – I mean, I think 2016 was universally hard for a lot of people. But between Scott's mom being so sick and then passing away, and then I was sick a lot this year.
What month did that happen in?
That happened in March.
Okay.
So January and February was mostly about
that,
taking care of her and, you know, being present for her. And I mean, Scott did the lion's share. He went every day after work and saw her, whether she was in the hospital or rehab or at
home.
That
has a huge effect on you as well.
Yeah. But so I think we succumbed to a lot of, he'd come home from seeing her and we'd order Chinese food.
Dan's dad was in the hospital dying, we ate French fries almost every day.
It's tough. But so couple that, and then I was sick for most of I had the flu and then colds and, you know, so from end of October to the time that I went on my book tour, I was in and out of one cold or flu after another. So that had an impact, because normally January and February is when I do most of my best cooking of the year, because that's my quietest time of the year. So I do most of my sort of exploring and adding things to my personal repertoire. So I didn't do a lot of that this year, I realize. And then I went right out into the book tour and I did 75 events for Naturally Sweet Food and Jars this year.
That is staggering.
And, you know, and I went to California twice. So not to make excuses, but it was a busy, intense year. So I'm actually pretty impressed with myself that I cooked. My list goes to 35 plus things.
Well, you know, most people have only 10 things that they make.
Really?
I mean, and when I say most people, I mean people that are not professional food writers or people that don't have home cooking as a hobby.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a totally worthy goal. If you're just getting into home cooking, that's that means you don't repeat something. You can go 2 weeks and not repeat. Well, I mean, with the amount that most people eat or eat out or take out, It's not bad.
No, I mean, I'm not embarrassed about my list, but I look at yours and like, I want to try some new things.
I really made it a goal for myself, though, as you recall.
Yeah.
And I'm happy. I'm very happy with the way it turned out. And one of the fun parts about making this list was I sort of remembered some things that I had forgotten along the way. Like early in the year, I made this delicious chicken, bacon, fennel ragu from the kitchen.
Ooh, that sounds really good.
Fantastic. I can't wait to make that again. And there's other things on here like that. You know, I love this particular falafel recipe from Epicurious. It's called My Favorite Falafel. Uh-huh. And sometimes I just kind of forget about it for months on end. And then that's the good thing about having – I think I'm going to save this. I think I'm going to try to keep something because I've made a list like this in recent years. Uh-huh. But I'd like to have like multiple years to look over. Oh, and I'm stuffed cabbage from Whole Grains from A New Generation.
That was so good. You gave me some of that. And I remember just loving that.
One of the problems with my zeal for finding and cooking new recipes is that Dan doesn't always respond great to new food. Like Dan likes the stuff that he likes. Mm-hmm. For example, for some incredibly mysterious reason to me, he did not like that stuffed cabbage. So, but still, I want to make it again. I think if he's exposed to something multiple times, he comes around. Anyway. Oh, yeah. It's the slow cooker pork chops with apples and onion. That's like a good wintry thing.
I remember you talking about that.
To get on again.
Well, and, you know, to reference back to several weeks ago, how many of these things were Instant Pot things? Like, has that become more of a...
Oh, that's another trend. Like, yeah. In my cooking, you can see there's definitely stuff here that is Instant Pot related soups in particular. There's that lemongrass chicken from Nom Nom Paleo, which I think you might have made as well, or maybe not.
I've made in the past, but I didn't do it in an Instant Pot. So.
I made a ragu in the Instant Pot. I've made tons of beans in there. So that definitely influenced my home cooking this year.
A lot of beans.
So anyway, what I want to tell you out there is that if you want to see this giant spreadsheet that I made and see Maurice's list as well and look at the links to our recipes, sign up for our newsletter.
Yes. In 2017, we're going to start sending a weekly newsletter. And so if you subscribe, we'll send you in the first issue of 2017, we'll send the link out to the spreadsheet so you can see what we made. You can see Joy's comprehensive list with links to the recipes, and I'll make sure to clean up my list a little bit and pull some links together because I know they exist out there. And then, so Joy, what's your cooking goal for 2017? To just keep it up?
Well, I think that I can maybe do, well, here's the thing. Let me just start out by saying I'm moving the third week in January to a home that will not have a functional kitchen because Dan wants to do the kitchen himself. How long will it take Dan to do the kitchen? That's anybody's guess.
Well, you know, you've got an Instant Pot.
It's true. I'm going to do that. And I have two induction burners and I have a really nice toaster oven. So I'm going to do what I can with what I have. But I would like to do this well next year. We'll see.
Fingers crossed.
I told Dan once the kitchen gets built, he might as well just put a little bed in there because I'm going to live in there. It's going to be like my dream kitchen, hopefully. And I think we're going to talk a little bit more about specific New Year's food resolutions next time.
Definitely.
I have some that are simmering in my mind.
Me too. But I think for, you know, specifically on dinner, I think my goal is to try at least one new recipe a month, new to me, new to Scott, because there's nothing like incorporating new flavors into your home cooking that can really open up everything you do.
It's really fun. Yeah. And just to give you one, we're at the end of the show, but let me just give you one quick example.
Yeah.
This plenty recipe with the Brussels sprouts and tofu.
Yeah.
You know how you usually will cook a Brussels sprout whole, or maybe you'll cut it in half, or perhaps you'll quarter it?
Mm-hmm.
This recipe instructs you to cut it into like three coins, basically.
Oh.
And you cook it over high heat in a skillet until it blackens in places.
God, that sounds so good.
Okay, so now I have a different way to cut Brussels sprouts that is good and interesting, and I would never have, you get sort of like a roasted result with the blackening, but you still get like a really crunchy texture. So we'll definitely like take that and apply it to future Brussels sprouts. I don't know. Yeah. I just feel like you learn so much from cooking from recipes.
It's true. And you know, in the years when I was doing that column for the Food Network's blog where I cooked other people's recipes, I remember that being so fruitful in terms of how it improved my own cooking. So I feel like it's time to come back to something like that.
Okay. So sign up for our mailing list, guys. In the first newsletter of 2017, you'll get access to this list, and you'll be able to do what we do when we're looking for cooking inspiration, which is just look over the stuff that we've made before. And that's the end of this show for today. And this is our last episode of 2016.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening. Thanks to Dan for editing the show. Thanks to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo and Raina Rose for providing our music. Thank you to Philly Camp for providing the studio space that we've been using lately. And thank you again for listening. If you've liked our show this year, in lieu of a Christmas present or a holiday gift, why don't you leave us a review on iTunes? They really do brighten our world when we see those. And please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on old episodes, and check out today's show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next year, happy eating.